Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Who do you turn to when you're looking for advice? A family member? Your best friend? Well, sometimes the best options are actually complete strangers, advice columnists. And even if you've never written in to ask for help in your own life, there's plenty to learn from reading about other people's struggles.
I have always been obsessed with advice. Ever since I was a little girl, I'd get the newspaper and I'd go to Dear Abby or Dear Anne. And as I started reading magazines growing up, I was always looking at the advice. They're entertaining, but you also glean a bit of something that you can take in your everyday life.
That's Tanya Mosley, the Silicon Valley bureau chief for KQED. She's also the host of the podcast called Truth Be Told, which Tanya uses to correct a glaring oversight she found throughout most mainstream advice columns.
Anytime an advice column took on issues around race or identity, there was a centering of whiteness in a way that was very implicit. So there was a column just last fall where Dear Abby received a letter from an Indian father who said, I'm not sure if I should name my child an Indian name. My wife wants to. I'm afraid about his future in this country, having an Indian name. And Dear Abby actually responded and said, you should not burden your son with an Indian name. And I was just floored by this advice because, first of all, we live in a diverse country where we all have different names, and these names are connected to our cultures, and they're very important to us. And if we're going to embrace that, we have to have different names and learn how to say different names. You have a name, Tanzina. I'm sure when you grew up, you probably had folks have problems at some point with your name. And that's because there is like this real push for us to assimilate and have names that really speak to the centering of whiteness.
You workshopped the show by talking to focus groups of people of color in the Bay Area before you decided to move forward with this. What was some of the feedback that you got from those sessions?
That's right. So my producer, Christina Kim, and I had several sessions with community members of color in the Bay Area, and we workshopped this idea of having an advice show for and by people of color. And one thing that we found that was a real takeaway for me and confirmation for me is that we as people of color are rarely in conversation with each other about the impacts of racism and how to deal and heal from it. And I want to be very specific to say we don't have these conversations in public radio. But these are public radio listeners, give or take, who say, you know, when I hear conversations around race and racism, it's often to a white audience. But I really want to be able to have conversations with other people of color around the issues that we're dealing with and how to solve these issues. But then also just someone who will understand, and we can have a conversation at a certain point where we're not having to start from the beginning to explain everything before we get to the meat of the issue.
So, Tanya, the second episode of your show is about interracial relationships. Let's take a listen to this listener question that prompted you to cover that topic.
I'm in a relationship with someone who I didn't think I would actually initially be attracted to. So I'm wondering, how can I navigate my relationship and be authentic to my desires, but also be critical of the ways in which the narratives I've absorbed about who's attractive have affected my sexuality?
What did the listener want you to explore when it came to interracial attraction?
Oh, well, this is one of my favorite shows for Truth Be Told. And we were unpacking colonized desire. And so let me explain a little bit about colonized desire. We have an expert, Amy Tsuyashi. She's the Dean of Ethnic Studies at San Francisco State University. And she basically says colonized desire is when the colonized person, say me as a Black person, has a set of beliefs around beauty and value that's based on the colonial power that has colonized them. So I could be, for instance, a woman of color who likes white men because I see them as the pinnacle of authority and culture and intellect. So colonized desire might also not be seeing yourself or your people beautiful or worthy of love. And the person who wrote to us basically was saying, all of my life, I have loved white men. Think about like beach babes, blonde hair, blue eyes. But I find myself in this loving relationship with someone who does not have all of those qualities. And because of that, I'm kind of like checking my desires, because I'm thinking, like, this is the first time I've really been in this type of relationship. And what has led me here? And then also, what are the reasons why I find myself desiring whiteness over my own people?
You also look at, in the interracial relationships episode, relationship between people of color. Tell us about that.
This is really important because, you know, when we think about what we see in the media around interracial love, it is often black and white. And we never really see other types of couples and other types of love out there to show us that there is a possibility for that. And what does that look like? So we wanted to explore what that looks like. And we were able to do that through a lovely couple, an Asian and black couple, who talks about some of the challenges they deal with in the day-to-day, but then also how they would love to see more of themselves in everyday life.
I think if people were to see more diverse representations of interracial couples, you know, specifically two people of color together,
right. Then
that would open their horizons to who they date.
Using the term people of color is something that I use quite often. There are lots of folks who use it. But there have been, you know, there's some criticism about the term as well, that it's not specific enough, that it sort of lumps us all into one category, and that's not fair. Why did you feel like this one was the right one for your show?
We were very intentional in using the term people of color. For one, we live in the Bay Area, and it's a diverse area, and we want it to be able to not only represent the Bay Area, but really the United States at large. I'm a black woman. My producer is Korean Spanish. My editor is South Asian American. So it really is the best definer for us on this show and who we're making this show for. And as you said, there has been a pushback on the term because really it erases blackness for some people. But I wanted to acknowledge where this came from and really reclaim the word. So back in the 70s, people of color was coined as a phrase to communicate solidarity between non-white women. And that was very powerful for me. So while the term people of color, in many instances today, we're taking a second look at it and thinking about, is it erasing the identities of people? I wanted to reclaim it for this show and say, hey, we are intentional in talking about people of color coming in conversation with each other, black, brown, indigenous, Asian folks, all coming together to have discussions around race and racism, and really being able to learn from each other, but also comfort each other, talk about ways that we can not only survive, but we thrive in this country and in this world. And so it was very important and very intentional to reclaim that term.
In the first episode of the show, one of the people you asked for advice was your grandmother. And I'd like to talk a little bit about us over 35 people of color and perhaps the under 35 cohort. Do we have anything to teach younger people of color?
This is such a good question, Tanzina, because it was very important to me to also think about having a multi-generational wise one. And the wise ones are experts on the show. I think that oftentimes we discount older people's perspectives. And it's because, you know, we're an ageist society, let's be real. So we, you know, you get over a certain age and we kind of have our focus on the millennials and younger. I know because I love my grandmother, and my grandmother's so full of advice. She's so wise that I wanted to be able to have her on to talk about her perspective. When you're in your 90s, I mean, the life that you've lived and what you've been able to teach young people, it's just amazing, and it really resonates with everyone who's listened to the show. And for our age, Tanzina, I think that oftentimes people skip over us, but there's a lot of value in the life we've lived, and I think we have a lot of advice to give young people. And so that was very important to me, too, to have people of different ages on the show to be able to talk and give advice, because we've lived life. We know a few things.
Tanya Mosley is the host of KQED's Truth Be Told and the Silicon Valley Bureau Chief for KQED. Tanya, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.